Hello, my name is Jeremy Ritchie. I'm the author of Sylvia Christel, From Emmanuel to Chabrol, and the editor of Soledad magazine. I'm excited today to supply this commentary track for Jules Chacan's splendid romantic comedy drama, The Last Romantic Lover. Released in France in the spring of 1978, The Last Romantic Lover was Chacan's fourth film after Emmanuel, Story of O, and Madame Claude. This film was a deliberate, marked departure from those first three films, as Chacan was looking to break away from the erotic filmmaker tag that had haunted him since Emmanuel's stunning financial success. As the host of a recent screening of The Last Romantic Lover at the Cinémathèque Française stated, this is quite the opposite from those earlier titles in Chacan's filmography. The Last Romantic Lover is, in fact, quite different from any film of the period, and it's easy to see why Chacan has called this his personal favorite of all of his films. Chacan wrote the screenplay for The Last Romantic Lover along with Oscar winner Inyo Dean Concini, and it's the most captivating script and story Chacan had ever worked with. Italian-born Concini was the perfect choice for collaborator for this extremely distinctive and unforgettable story centered around both the circus and pageant worlds. Well into his 50s at this point, and very much a veteran of the film industry, Concini was coming off one of his most controversial screenplays for Tinto Brass's Salon Kitty, which had created a minor firestorm everywhere it played throughout 1976 and 1977. The charming The Last Romantic Lover was worlds apart from Brass's Nazi exploitation epic, and it shows just how varied Concini could be. These opening moments provide us with an introduction to two of The Last Romantic Lover's greatest attributes, the photography of cinematographer Robert Fraisse and the music of Pierre Bachelet. Both of these extremely talented artists played major roles throughout Chacan's career, and I'll be discussing their contributions later in this commentary. These extremely evocative opening credits featuring a circus fire breather immediately show off Fraisse's skills utilizing color, darkness, and light. They also play heavily into the circus culture that is paid tribute to throughout the film. The circus has been a source of cinematic inspiration since the earliest days of film. Titles ranging from Charlie Chaplin's silent classic, The Circus, to the Elvis Presley vehicle Roustabout, to more recent Hollywood big-budget features like Water for Elephants, have all centered their stories around these mysterious traveling sideshows, and it remains an extremely cinematic subject to tackle, thanks in no small part to the many colorful figures that work in the industry, not to mention the many animal acts that have always ensured ticket buyers. I love these shots of the circus workers walking with torches along this hill at dusk. Chacan is such a master at capturing unforgettable and often surprising moments that constantly show that he is a filmmaker who thinks outside the box. These almost eerie opening scenes contain deep levels of mystery and are a marvelous introduction to such a truly distinctive film. We're introduced to two of the major players in this heavily populated film here, with Gerard Ismail as Pierre and Fernando Rey as Max. Spanish-born Rey is one of the most recognizable actors in The Last Romantic Lover, and it's not surprising since the great award winner had nearly 250 film roles to his name. Rey was on a real winning streak when he shot The Last Romantic Lover, as he had just won Best Actor at the 1977 Cannes Film Festival for Carlos Saura's Elisa, My Life. And he had also just performed in one of his most acclaimed productions, Louis Buñuel's That Obscure Object of Desire. Rey just wasn't known for the European art house, though, as his unforgettable roles in both French Connection films had made him a big star back in Hollywood as well. He's splendid throughout The Last Romantic Lover, giving a performance that is filled with both heart and humor. The Last Romantic Lover was the big screen debut for Ismail, who had previously only appeared in a handful of television productions up to this point. He's fine throughout the film, opposite a number of more recognizable faces, and The Last Romantic Lover remains probably the highlight of his screen career. It's also one of his largest roles, as much of his career saw him in supporting turns, such as his work for Valerian Borovchek in Immoral Women, just a year after this film. The large supporting cast that appears throughout The Last Romantic Lover is the most expansive Jacquin ever worked with, and I can imagine logistically this film must have been a challenge to shoot. Every frame consists of no small amount of activity, and a few familiar faces to cult fans pop up throughout the film. I'll do my best to mention them. This adorable little chimp that Ray is holding is one of the many animals that we see throughout The Last Romantic Lover. Many of the cast and crew had to go through basic carnival training to work with the animals in the production to ensure that everyone was safe. This was particularly important to star Dale Hayden for her scenes later with elephants, and especially snakes, which she admits in the interview on this disc absolutely terrified her. Speaking of the mesmerizing Dale Hayden, we're now getting our first look at her in the film. Hayden, who had previously worked with Jacquin on Madame Claude, was still only in her late 20s when she shot The Last Romantic Lover, and it remains perhaps her defining role and the greatest work of her screen career in an emotional performance that is a combination of sharp, seductive, and sweet. Despite her young age, Hayden had already had a stunning career by 1978 that had left a major mark in both the world of film and fashion. Starting out her career in dance as a teenager, the Canadian-born Hayden would find major success in both the film and modeling world throughout the 70s. Hayden is a highly respected and admirable humanitarian, UNICEF ambassador, as well as she's been the spokesperson for L'Oreal. Hayden's multifaceted life has been as fascinating as her film roles, and she is just sublime as Elizabeth in The Last Romantic Lover, and she shared a very special bond with Jacquin.
Avec ce foutu amant romantique.
Mais non.
Mes signes sont vraiment trop nombreux dans ce lit.
This first brief love scene immediately shows the audience that they are in for quite a different experience compared to Jacquin's earlier, more explicit works. Like the rest of the film, there is both a playfulness to this scene, and Jacquin's peekaboo direction would have been extremely surprising in its restraint for audiences thinking they were going to get another story of O.
La prochaine fois, je te promets, dès la fin du concours, je serai entièrement à toi.
A key aspect of The Last Romantic Lover is the way that it turns the typical objectification of women on its head by highlighting a contest looking to find the perfect man that's so integral to its plot. So unfairly demonized after Emmanuel, Jacquin repeatedly called into question the baked-in male gaze that had dominated film history, never more so than here, although his Lady Chatterley's lover with Sylvia Christel would do much the same a few years after this film. Far removed from the typical so-called erotic director, Jacquin fills his films with strong female parts. In retrospect, Jacquin's films have a much stronger feminist streak than previously noted, and a major connecting point between all his movies are the leading female characters who often end up dominating the men they're partnered with. From Emmanuel to Gwendolyn, Jacquin would celebrate strong femininity in each one of his films, with perhaps this one being the most resounding example. Hayden's fiery performance brilliantly portrays a successful and smart professional woman who serves no man, and and her underrated performance is the equal to a number of successful career women that were being portrayed more and more as the 70s progressed on with the feminist movement and sexual revolution.
Question de pénétration.
Et comment le voyez-vous, ce dernier amant romantique?
Pour moi, Jacquin had been working with strong, independent women since the dawn of his career in the 60s. Born during World War II in 1940, Jacquin always had a strong interest in the arts, although his photography career began in the odd place of military service while he was in his late teens. With his undeniable eye for capturing unforgettable images, Jacquin quickly became one of the most revered fashion photographers of the 60s, capturing some of the most memorable faces of the period. After working at Paris Match, Jacquin had early experiences behind a moving camera on the popular French music show Dim Dam Dawn that would introduce him to the composer of his choice, Pierre Bachelet.
Nous disposons de tous les moyens nécessaires. Télévision, radio, journaux et autres.
Jacquin's career could have went in many different directions, but he always had in mind a future film career. The opportunity came in 1973 when fellow legendary photographer David Hamilton turned down what would have been his first film as well, Emmanuel. Jacquin, Bachelet, Robert Fraisse, and a young Dutch actress would make Emmanuel the biggest French hit of the 70s, shocking the young director, who faced an incredibly hostile reaction from the press, and more disappointingly from his peers that had once adored his work. Despite the brilliance of Emmanuel, Jacquin, like Sylvia, would spend the rest of their careers attempting to escape the shadow of Emmanuel. Time has shown what an exceptional filmmaker Jacquin is, and The Last Romantic Lover features his strongest and most fully realized work of his big screen career. As I mentioned earlier, one of the great contributors to this film, and Jacquin's work in general, is the legendary composer Pierre Bachelet. Slightly younger than Jacquin, Bachelet's already well-established musical career was thrown in a hurricane-like spotlight after his work on Emmanuel, whose soundtrack album provided him one of his biggest hits, as well as a lawsuit from King Crimson founder Robert Fripp for lifting a bit of his music. Even more accomplished was Bachelet's sumptuous score for Story of O, which stands as one of the great soundtracks of the post-war era. Scheduling conflicts made Madame Claude one of the only Jacquin films Bachelet didn't score, with Serge Gainsbourg memorably stepping in. For The Last Romantic Lover, Bachelet returned, supplying one of the most memorable scores and albums of his career. Famed French songstress Marie Laforet sings one of the songs in the soundtrack as well, and it would actually find more success than the film did, being released as a single in France in 1978. Sadly, this exceptional score is out of print currently, although copies of various vinyl versions can be found, and I highly recommend the album for lovers of the film, Bachelet, and French pop music in general.
Moi aussi je voudrais être fier de moi. Je pourrais me voir un instant pied.
Un grand miroir pour mon seigneur.
The Last Romantic Lover was produced by a relative novice in the film world, Bernard Lanteric, who had a connection with Dale Hayden, as one of his only previous production credits had been the uber-strange 1976 French production Spermula that Hayden had starred in.
Je vois Pierre. Ça, c'est précise.
Despite a number of new faces behind the scenes and on screen, Jacquin did have a number of frequent collaborators on the set of The Last Romantic Lover to go along with Bachelet and Fraisse. These included costume designer Edith Wotan, who had done such memorable work on Madame Claude. Joining forces with actress and fellow designer Zarika Lozic, Wotan takes full advantage of the opportunity, supplying some of the most memorable outfits of the period. This is especially true in the film's many circus-based scenes, And of course, Hayden is perfection in all of her stylish outfits, made especially for her. Like Madame Claude, The Last Romantic Lover presents the 70s at their most refined and least gaudy, two aspects that define all of Jacquin's filmed works.
Nous en sommes à 500 000 lettres et 480 074 photos. 480 692, excusez-moi, c'était le chiffre de ce matin.
Vous en avez pré-sélectionné...
Along with Jacquin, the key behind-the-scenes player is future Oscar nominee Robert Fraze, whose amazing skills as a photographer have produced some of the most glorious and unforgettable images in all of modern film. Jacquin and Fraze met initially in the 60s, and it was Jacquin who brought Fraze on board for the first Emmanuel as cameraman. This led to Fraze shooting Emmanuel 2 for Francis Giacobetti.
Si c'est vous qui le dites.
Un peu trop habillé, peut-être.
Reviens à celui d'avant.
Celui-là? Tu plaisantes?
Fraze's expert work behind the camera guides the look of The Last Romantic Lover, and it remains one of the most beautiful and inventive films in its considerable canon. Unlike the rather noirish Madame Claude, The Last Romantic Lover is a glittering work that features one eye-popping scene after another, rendered especially well here by this new 4K transfer that Fraze himself supervised.
Bien sûr que c'est important. 550 000 hommes prêts à passer à l'abattoir. Moi, je trouve ça important.
L'abattoir?
As Hayden notes in the interview on this disc, she was in America when she got the call from Jacquin that he wanted her to star in his newest film. Recalling the warm, creative partnership the two had formed on Madame Claude, Hayden immediately jumped at the opportunity, despite her fear of snakes, and flew to France to make what we can now see is her greatest on-screen appearance. Hayden greatly enjoyed making The Last Romantic Lover, even more than Madame Claude, and, like Jacquin, has called this film her personal favorite. The two remain close friends to this day, with Hayden praising Jacquin as someone who is warm, inclusive, and huggable.
Tu disais que tu n'étais pas venu de New York pour me voir téléphoner. Alors pourquoi tu es là?
That word inclusive is particularly important, and it's an attitude that I believe has helped Jacquin's films age much better than many of his often more acclaimed peers. Hayden's description of working with Jacquin as one adventure after another and beautiful fun is particularly noteworthy. She also notes that while she and a number of the cast were afraid of some of the wild animals on set, Jacquin treated them with as much care and dignity as the actors, a fact that I was particularly happy to hear as an animal lover myself.
D'être sa familiale. Tu es content? On y va?
Hayden's recollection that Jacquin carries joy with him everywhere he goes comes across profoundly in this very special film. The Last Romantic Lover is a film clearly made by someone who not only loves cinema, but is deeply aware of its history. Jacquin valued Hayden just as much, calling her a truly great actress, and he clearly trusted her valuable instincts as a performer throughout both Madame Claude and especially The Last Romantic Lover. Even though they only made these two films together, there is something quite magical about the professional partnership between Dale and Just.
En équilibre sur une seule roue, les yeux bandés. Eh, la roue arrière, hein?
Considering how different the glitzy interior world and gritty outdoor settings are throughout The Last Romantic Lover, it is perhaps not surprising that Jacquin had two different editors working behind the scenes for what must have been a most difficult assignment for both. Oscar winner Françoise Bonnet had been working steadily since the early 60s, and The Last Romantic Lover was just one of several highly valued cult films that she edited in the 70s that included Dario Argento's startling Four Flies on Grey Velvet and Roman Polanski's bone-chilling The Tenant. This was the only time Bonnet worked on a Jacquin film, and she has gone on to have a very successful Hollywood career editing films, often for filmmaker Julie Taymor, on works like Frida and Across the Universe. The film's second editor, Michelle Baum, was better known for their role in the sound departments of such works as The Tenant. Jacquin valued his work enough to call him back for editing assignments on a short film in Private Collections and his final work, Gwendolyn. Despite having two editors, The Last Romantic Lover is an incredibly cohesive production that seamlessly flows throughout its running time. For the complex and varied production design, Jacquin brought Jean-Baptiste Porot on board for the assignment. The two had previously worked together on Story of O, where Porot provided the film's exquisite art direction. Porot's work throughout The Last Romantic Lover is a resounding success, as each scene is filled with design touches that show both a lot of skill and thought. This marks the final time the two would work together, and Perrault would go on to work mostly in French film for the next couple of decades, for directors like André Zulawski. Coincidentally, Perrault worked on the dreaded Emmanuel Six, providing another connection to Jacquin's inescapable original film. Another interesting behind-the-scenes player on The Last Romantic Lover was assistant director Gérard Pojolar, who would go on to work again in the same capacity on Jacquin's terrific and sadly little-seen Girls in 1980. Perhaps even more interesting is that Pojolar would go on to work with Jean-Jacques Benex on masterful films like Diva and Moon in the Gutter, providing yet another connection between Jacquin and the great French film movement of the 1980s. Considering just how expansive the cast is in The Last Romantic Lover, one of the production's key assignments of casting director was handed to Margot Cavalier, yet another woman who would play a very valuable role in Jacquin's film. Living to the ripe old age of 96 before her death in 2007, Cavalier ended up casting some of the finest films of the past 50 years, including Kaufman's The Unbearable Lightness of Being and Kieslowski's masterpieces, The Three Colors Trilogy. Cavalier was also key in one of my favorite casting calls of the 80s when she suggested the young Emmanuel Seigneur for her role in Polanski's Frantic, a personal favorite performance and film of mine. Her keen eye of casting was legendary, and she assured The Last Romantic Lover was filled with one memorable face after another.
Vous n'avez aucune des qualités requises pour être le dernier amant romantique.
Je comprends pas.
Vous n'êtes ni beau, ni charmant.
The sequence featuring Dale interviewing and rejecting male contestants in the search for the last romantic lover is key to not only the film, but also Jacquin's filmography in general. Here we see the idea of objectification turned on its head, and Dale does such a wonderful job playing a shrewd and incredibly smart businesswoman in charge of what was typically a male-dominated profession. The idea of beauty pageants has popped up in countless numbers of films throughout cinema history, but having the contestants being all male was a novel one, and it adds to the complex layering at the heart of The Last Romantic Lover. A lighthearted romance might ultimately be the subject of Jacquin's film, but this is in actuality a much deeper and more serious work that delves into the changing gender roles that were rapidly happening in this period, thanks in no small part to the feminist movement. Making the scene even more resounding is just how funny some of the moments are. It's so nice for a change watching men being objectified, and even gently being made fun of in humorous ways. And some of their embarrassment is still quite palatable here. And you can tell that Dale is just having an absolute blast playing this part. I love this moment between Max and Pierre driving here in this incredibly beaten-down car. Pierre even notes at one point that he feels like a prostitute, a thought that once again tosses typical gender roles out the window. The sequence also contains a knowing wink to the audience with a joke about Emmanuel not being a very good film. A sly bit of humor that shows Jacquin could be extremely self-defacing, and it adds to the general light-hearted tone of the picture. The Last Romantic Lover gave Jacquin the opportunity to shine a light on a number of industries that he'd worked in previously. You had the high fashion world of Elizabeth's magazine work, and also the television world that is capturing the contest that will determine the winner of the film's title pageant. Throughout these sequences, Jacquin gives the audience striking behind-the-scenes glimpses into these very specialized industries. These auditions also provide a look into what actors, and especially actresses, have to go through in what is a bit like a very frantic cattle call. Jacquin handles the packed nature of all of these scenes extremely well, and he seems to really be enjoying offering audiences a glance behind a number of different curtains throughout the film. Hayden really excels throughout these moments where we see her interviewing and studying each male contestant to see if they have what it takes to become the last romantic lover. It's fascinating to watch Dale essentially playing the part of a director choosing the ideal type she has in mind. It's just another intriguing example of the many role reversals that can be found in Jacquin's filmography. Dale alternates brilliantly throughout these moments between being a very ruthless businesswoman as well as a sympathetic human being, such as in the moment earlier when we saw her gently reminding an elderly contestant that he might have won in his younger days. I cannot praise Dale Hayden's incredible performance in this film enough. It is a true revelation.
Artist.
Enlevez ça. Tournez.
One of the most tragic aspects of Juice Jacquin's film career is that the better he got, the less audiences came out for his work. While Emmanuel and Story of O had proven huge financial triumphs, both Madame Claude and especially this film were relative flops at the French box office, a fact that I'm sure was incredibly difficult for Jacquin to handle, as his direction in both of these films is absolutely superb. Jacquin never made a bad film, but he would never again find the commercial home runs that Emmanuel and Story of O had given him. Hayden mentions on this disc interview that she suspects that Jacquin would have had much more luck had Emmanuel not been his first film, and I agree with that notion. No matter the great quality of his work as a filmmaker, audiences and critics always pegged him as essentially an erotic director. Hopefully now that time has passed and more of his films like this one come back into light, his career can continue to undergo a proper critical evaluation.
Il était dompteur des lions.
L'ennui, c'est qu'on prend pas les muets.
Dale Hayden also received similar pushback throughout her career as well, due to narrow-minded critics and audience members who refused to see past her beauty. Promoting The Last Romantic Lover in Canada upon its release in 1979, Dale was upfront about some of these issues. She would tell a journalist at the premiere, "If you're at all pretty, most people think that everything is easy for you, and they're only interested in you on a superficial level. But I can't stand superficiality. When I act, I like to dig down deep, to go way below the surface. As an actress, you're trying to make people understand you, and people usually latch on to the easiest or most surface image they see. I constantly have to break my image. Asked about how her career as a model had helped or hindered her film career, she said, "Most people think that modeling means just posing and really being into your looks, but there are other levels. Modeling is such a transitory thing, and there's only so long you can do it, so I wanted to have something else." She continued, "My start in film was almost accidental. I got a role in a Walt Disney film, and then did a Canadian movie called Paperback Hero. Then I did a film in Italy called The Cousin. After that, I decided if I was going to act, then I was going to do it really well. So I came back to New York and began studying again." Some of you no doubt noticed briefly ago Zhu Shikan making a quick cameo appearance, sharing the screen briefly with one of his greatest actresses. Almost 2 years after this film was released in France, it played briefly in the United States, where it was distributed by New Line Pictures. Promoting the film during that release, Dale would talk to the press again. Speaking of Jacquin, she would say, "He sees things differently from me. He has a naive, romantic, childlike view of life, while I find life more painful, less rose-colored than he does. He's the aesthetic, very visual, and he's trying to get away from the pornographer reputation that the Emmanuel movies made for him." My role in Last Romantic Lover was very difficult for me because it was written by a Frenchman and an Italian and reflected their country's odd notion of what an American woman is like. She would go on, "I loved working with the Spanish circus in The Last Romantic Lover, and it was wonderful acting with Fernando Rey, who plays the circus owner. He reminded me of Santa Claus, and I just wanted to hug him all the time." Discussing whether or not all of the dialogue was difficult for her, she would state, "Fortunately, I have a photographic memory, so learning my lines at that speed didn't worry me." She would also go on to say that she much more valued her European films rather than her American ones like North Dallas 40.
La plus sentimentale, la plus romantique.
Making her debut in The Last Romantic Lover as one of Elizabeth's assistants is talented French actress Cyrille Claire. Still very active to this day, Claire would travel to India after shooting The Last Romantic Lover to join forces with Alejandro Jodorowsky on his Tusk. Even more important was the dazzling work she would make with Alain Robbe-Grillet about 5 years after her debut here in his La Belle Captive. Appearing as the master of ceremony here is real-life presenter and promoter Jean-Marie Rivière. Known in France as the world's greatest showman, Rivière was in charge of a number of famed Parisian cabarets, including L'Alcazar, L'Ange Bleu, and Le Paradise Latin. His appearance here would have been noteworthy, especially to any older audience members who would have happened to have seen this film upon its release. We're now coming up to one of my favorite sections of the film, thanks to the surprise appearance by the fantastic Delilah Di Lazzaro, playing herself. She was partners with Shikan in real life during this period, and it's super cool to see her here. Born in Udine, Italy, in the early days of 1953, Lazzaro, like Shikan, had her footing in the fashion industry of the 60s, before making the leap into film in 1972. Intense, sensual, and extremely talented, Lazzaro quickly became one of the most in-demand international actresses of the period, although her success in Europe never broke through here in the States. She often worked in cult films and was associated with the exploding giallo movement, working with directors such as Sergio Martino and eventually even Dario Argento. Lazzaro had just given her most accomplished performance in Flavio Margherini's Haunting the Pajama Girl case when she turned up for this surprise appearance for Jacquin. It's a brief but unforgettable moment in the film, And I particularly love the way Lazaro tells Pierre to play the part like she is, briefly dropping the veil of stardom that surrounds her. Great stuff. Lazaro and Jacquin would sadly never make a full movie together, but they sure were a beautiful couple at the time, and I really love her appearance here. Because of the heavily populated cast filled with blink and miss parts, I should also go ahead and mention that another shining light of Euro cult cinema also makes an early appearance in this film. Watch closely, and you might spot future Lucio Fulci icon Catriona McCall, who makes her big screen debut in this film. The British-born McCall would end up meeting Fulci just about a year after this film was released, and by 1980 was starring in a trilogy of his most revered films, City of the Living Dead, House by the Cemetery, and The Beyond. I could honestly do a full commentary about the people that pop up in bit parts in this film, which also include everyone from future BAFTA award-winning filmmaker Anne Fontaine to even one of Peppermint Soda's stars, Coralie Clement, who also makes a brief appearance. Jacquin packed each one of his films with talent, and he clearly is an artist who loves other artists, an aspect of all of his work that I greatly value.
Le chanson du dernier roman romantique. D-Way.
The singer introduced here as D-Way is actually lip-syncing the version of the theme song sung on the soundtrack by singer Cher Commissar. This track, along with the Marie Laforet single I mentioned earlier, was released as a 45 in 1978 and had some minor chart success in France. The song also made an appearance in the 1979 Spanish production Stray Dogs. Sadly, I wasn't able to uncover any information as to why Commissar herself didn't appear in the film, or Laforet for that matter, nor who the one young woman is here lip-singing, but it certainly makes for an entertaining moment in the film and highlights Bachelet's energetic and fun score.
Écoute, Max, je t'en veux tellement que peut-être après le concours, je reviendrai pas au cirque.
Oui, Pierre.
Earlier in the commentary, I mentioned Jacquin's involvement with the French TV variety show Dim Dam Dom, and his experiences there certainly figure heavily in these sequences of The Last Romantic Lover. Dim Dam Dom premiered in the spring of 1965 on French television and became an instant hit, particularly with the female audiences it was geared towards. The ORTF show was actually produced by a much-admired professional woman, much like Elizabeth's character here, named Daisy D. Gallard. Armed with a journalism degree, Gallard created Dim Dam Dom while she was simultaneously with Elle magazine, which she eventually became the editor of in the 70s. The original Dim Dam Dom ended up running from 1965 to 1972, monthly, on Sunday evenings. The show consisted of interviews, sketches, and the many musical performances it became extremely acclaimed for. A 2007 piece from Le Monde on the show's history detailed its origins as an unclassifiable televised magazine whose title sounds good in tune with the times. Dim, because it is broadcast on Sundays. Dam, because women are the main target. Dom, because we want to address men too. But mostly because it doesn't look like anything else. The piece continued with, Dim Dam Dom is inspired by Elle, then at the peak of its modernity and its international reputation, which targets women in the process of emancipation, who are supposed to be interested in everything. A Dim Dam Dom image takes precedence over commentary. Nothing seems fixed. It is all fantasy and invention. Jacquin would end up meeting the cream of the French artistic and entertainment crop during his stint there, and these intriguing moments in The Last Romantic Lover that focuses as much on the television production filming the pageant as the competition itself, feels like Jacquin paying tribute to the program that helped give his career one of its greatest boosts. In fact, each one of Jacquin's films has at least some connection back to Dim Dam Dom, mostly in regards to the people he worked with behind the scenes, such as Bachelet, but its artistic and cultural influence was never felt as strongly as it was during these moments. Despite Jacquin's connection to some of the most revered French artists of the post-war era, of which he should be included. Mainstream film critics have always accused his work of being the tired old cliché of all style, no substance. To say this is narrow-minded in regards to Jacquin is an understatement. While he is certainly amongst the most stylish directors of the past 50 years, his films are filled with subtext. From the feminist underpinnings of Emmanuel, to the questioning of gender roles in Story of O, to the political implications of Madame Claude, Jacquin's films always questioned authority, pushed the status quo, and refused the type of salacious pigeonholing that many critics attempted to force them and him into. The Last Romantic Lover might be the lightest of Jacquin's films in both mood and subtext, but much more than just another romantic comedy, it has much to say, particularly in these sequences, about the way that we view each other, and the commercialization of romance itself. Presenting the technical nuts and bolts behind what it takes to produce a seemingly mindless television program is a cultural statement in itself. This lengthy pageant passage in the movie is amongst the bravest and most innovative in Jacquin's canon. I've honestly never quite seen anything like it. I'll go more into some detail of the critical reaction that The Last Romantic Lover received later in this commentary, but I did want to go ahead and mention that while the reviews were extremely mixed, a number did particularly praise this section of the film. During its brief American release in 1980, Newsday, for example, noted the movie's best moments occurred during this section, while the Los Angeles Times' Kevin Thomas even mentioned that they helped the film score some major feminist points. A thought that seems especially obvious, but sadly not many critics bothered to notice, let alone mention.
On est en direct sur RTL. Alors, tout marche bien?
Bien sûr.
Mais comment vous expliquez un pareil succès? L'homme.
For any curious, none of the contestants singing made it to Bachelet's soundtrack album. You know, it's a shame that the album is currently missing in action, even streaming-wise, as it was so pivotal to the great French composer's career. Outside of the French lawsuit, all of Bachelet's soundtrack work helped lead him to his excellent and influential 1980 album, She's From Elsewhere, his second full-length solo work that found some of its footing, especially in this soundtrack. Also key to the soundtrack's success was arranger Jean Tschulis, whose eclectic presence is felt throughout. His own inventive solo album, Spectacles, coincided with the release of The Last Romantic Lover soundtrack, and the two make for very interesting companion pieces. Coincidentally, one of the great arranger's most popular tracks shared The Last Romantic Lover's international title, Playmate, and was released in the wake of the film's American premiere in the early 80s. An aspect I really love about The Last Romantic Lover that isn't found in Jacquin's other films is the paternal relationship between Ismail and Ray's characters. There is no small amount of emotion when we see him rushing to Ray's side and throwing the competition in the process, and much of that is due to Ray's unnerving abilities as a screen actor, even in the smallest of roles. For Ray, acting was not only a way of life, but it had in fact saved his life as a youth. As he noted in a 1987 Los Angeles Times interview, "I became a movie extra just to get money to eat, and to lose myself as a face in the crowd. I never had that ambition to be an actor, but it was like a chain reaction. One day a director asked me if I could say a line, and I did it. I had a parentheses feeling in those first years that one day the parentheses would be closed, but here I am." Ray credited his early experiences as a dubber for English language films playing in foreign language markets for much of his career. Recalling his legendary dubbing work for Laurence Olivier, Ray would state in the LA Times, "I know Olivier as an actor better than he does himself. This dubbing was very good training, since I had never been in an acting school. Olivier is such a tricky actor. I learned so many tricks from him for the camera. I think it was in Richard III, I noticed that he covered his face with his hand, and when he moved it, he had another expression. Wonderful." The dubbing process allowed Ray the opportunity to learn the importance of watching and reacting in film acting, and he utilized that to great effect throughout his career, including here. It's a tribute to him that he approached each role, no matter the size, with the same amount of dedication. He adds so much to The Last Romantic Lover, even in the moments when he has no dialogue, perhaps even more so in those moments.
Numéro 2, le saphir. Numéro 7, l'acteur. Et numéro 10, suprême de nom.
Despite the often unfair mixed receptions that would greet his films, Jacquin remained one of the most acclaimed photographers in France, so he took special care choosing how his films were represented promotion-wise, and The Last Romantic Lover was no different. On set, photographer Georges Pierre was on hand capturing many of the stills that would accompany the film's excellent promo campaign. According to his official website, Pierre had also deep connections to both the ORTF station that Dim Dam Dom had played on, as well as Elle magazine. Ironically, he had desired and studied to become an actor, but a tour of Africa has inspired his career in photography. After a few years at Elle and the newspaper Photo, Pierre found representation initially by Gamma and then finally Sigma. His career on film sets started out extremely auspiciously when he was hired for Last Year at Marienbad in 1961. Of the hundreds of iconic films he provided stills for, Pierre recalled his job was not to transform the moving image into a still image, but to restore the spirit of the film. A tireless advocate for photographers' rights, Pierre also invented a soundproofing device called the blimp that helped allow more access to still photographers on film sets. He had also previously worked with Jacquin on Story of O's memorable promotional campaign. Another famed photographer who worked on The Last Romantic Lover's press campaign and photographed a number of the best shots ever taken of Dale Hayden in the period was French photographer Christian Simon-Petrie. Because of the importance and time given to the competition of the film's title featuring these musical numbers, Jacquin ensured that a professional choreographer was on set, instructing the actors and helping them out of their comfort zones. This integral position was given to Molly Malloy, one of the few Americans who worked on The Last Romantic Lover. Born in Massachusetts in 1940, Malloy came from a family of dancers stretching back to the early vaudeville days. Malloy left a marked legacy in the field of movement, including a form of modern American dance she created that became known as the Malloy Technique of Jazz Dance. Her work at Paris's legendary Crazy Horse Cabaret helped inform her exceptional work here on The Last Romantic Lover. The Last Romantic Lover was, in fact, the first big screen production she ever worked on, and Jacquin was impressed enough with her to invite her back for his Girls in 1980. While her big screen career would sadly be limited, The Last Romantic Lover would, strangely enough, play a major role in her later career, when she began working with Gifford's Circus in the 2000s. Malloy was just another example of how Jacquin ensured that all of his film sets were filled with great artists from many different fields that he admired.
Merci, monsieur.
Les applaudis, bien sûr.
As we are just around the halfway point here in the film, many of you have no doubt noted the lack of any nudity or sexual content that Jacquin's first three films have been known for. Imagine audiences' reaction at the time, who had already pegged Jacquin unfairly as just a director of eroticism. Critics also pointed out this surprising aspect of The Last Romantic Lover. Canadian Fred Hassaker, writing for the Calgary Herald, mentioned in the opening lines of his review that fans of Jacquin's early works might be disappointed with the relatively sedate Last Romantic Lover. LA Weekly would also mention the tameness of the love scenes compared to those first three films, but would go on to praise their restraint. Newsday, in their mostly negative review, still amazingly penned the film as a sexploitation work, while Kevin Thomas in the LA Times called the film discreetly erotic, despite giving it a barely mature rating for his readers. Richard Labonte, writing for the Ottawa Citizen, correctly noted that most of the skin in the film belonged to the male contestants, but still incredibly enough called the film fuzzy porn, amazing as The Last Romantic Lover is as far removed from any type of porn imaginable. These same critics did all agree on one thing, though, and that was the success of the competition scenes we have been watching throughout this stretch of the film. Thomas called these sequences both lavish and hysterical, while Michael Mazza, writing for the Arizona Republic, had some of the most perceptive thoughts on these televised moments, noting especially that Robert Fraze captured the confines of the television set splendidly. He would go on to spend much of his review detailing some of the more memorable aspects of the film's competition.
Pourquoi tu veux perdre? J'adore.
Despite critical assertions of fuzzy porn or restrained eroticism, The Last Romantic Lover owes much more to the romantic comedy genre that was initially found on stage and then finally screen more than anything else. The key gender reversal that plays throughout the film is one of the hallmarks of the classic romantic comedy and stretches all the way back to Shakespearean works like Twelfth Night. Even more relevant, perhaps, were the classic Hollywood screwball comedies of the Depression era that Jacquin had grown up enjoying. These glitzy, sometimes lavish films often incorporated many of the same aspects found in The Last Romantic Lover, from that questioning of gender, to musical numbers, to sometimes fantastical plot points that presented films as hyper-real spaces, such as the pivotal moment coming up when Pierre chooses Elizabeth as his runner-up prize for a vacation together. These often silly and logic-defying storylines have guided many of cinema's greatest romantic comedies, from My Man Godfrey, all the way up to more recent works like the Sandra Bullock vehicle The Proposal. Jacquin and Concini's script delights in playing up some of the more fantastical elements of these classic comedies throughout The Last Romantic Lover, and they take full advantage of the opportunity, understanding that outside of horror and science fiction films, no other genre allows audiences to suspend their disbelief like the romantic comedy. The genre was designed to not only make people laugh and feel good, but to also give audiences members the thought that maybe, just maybe, the perfect partner they haven't found is out there somewhere for them. Even though these perfect partners are more often than not the most fantastical notions these films present.
Alors, tu as perdu? Mais tu es nu.
Mais non, t'inquiète pas.
Jacquin is an artist deeply entrenched in both the history of stage and screen, so it's a real kick getting to watch him play up the genre's most well-known elements while introducing a number of his own innovations, making The Last Romantic Lover both part of a rich lineage and completely unique as well. Like many of the best romantic comedies, The Last Romantic Lover doesn't rely on jokes per se, but instead depends on situations to draw not necessarily laughs out of the audience, although they can be found here, but just a general warm and good feeling. Compared to The Last Romantic Lover to a deadly serious and ultra-cool work like Story of O, to see just how varied a filmmaker Jacquin could be in setting a mood.
Pour ne pas enlever son slip. Ne serait-ce pas lui le véritablement romantique?
Concini turned out to be the perfect choice as screenwriter, as his work in a number of Italian comedies had shown him a master of the genre. While he wrote scripts in nearly every genre imaginable throughout his acclaimed career, works ranging from divorce Italian style to the delightfully logic-stretching Kiss Me Quick, I'm Cold, to even darkly humorous films like The Murderous Bluebeard, showed Concini as a master of surprising comedic situations, and he uses those skills as a writer to great effect in both the construction and storyline. This scene marks the thematic halfway point of the film, and it's the moment the mood slightly shifts for the rest of the film's running time. With Max's character out of the picture, Pierre becomes a much more lively part for Ishmael to play. While they had a few glances and words backstage, this is the first moment in the film where we feel a true spark between these two, and both actors are just extremely charming here. Hayden's part is particularly tricky, as she is playing a character who is herself playing a character, and she has to attempt to keep that second facade from falling away. She's really fantastic here, displaying a kind of hidden shock and bewildered amusement as she slowly discovers Pierre's dastardly plan. This scene also stands as one of the best shot, realized, and thought-out scenes in Jacquin's entire canon. This is a near 2-minute single-shot take with no cutaways. This is presented exactly as the film's home audience members would have been watching as this unfolded on TV. It's a marvelous shot, and a real tribute to the obvious care Jacquin put into all of his films, particularly this one. And bravo to both Ishmael and Hayden for performing it so well and with such concentration. It's a real show-stopping moment for all involved. So that brings us to the end of the competition section of the film. And from here, the film really starts to call us to suspend our disbelief into accepting that such a strong and serious career woman as Elizabeth would even consider going with Pierre, who she barely knows. Thankfully, Jacquin had firmly established this as a very lighthearted romance from the get-go, and he's been establishing that now for an hour. So viewers of the genre know to expect this kind of turn. That's part of the genre. If anything, The Last Romantic Lover waits much later in the film to ask the audience for this particular suspension of disbelief. Most romantic comedies typically do it much earlier in the film, and then they kind of spend the rest of the running time resolving it.
Bonsoir, s'il vous plaît. Merci.
Bonjour.
Tiens, bonjour.
Écoutez. Je suis réaliste, vous l'êtes aussi.
I really love that he's got that copy of Francois here. I really dig moments in films that are of their time, you know? And it just kind of plays in with the film's relative easygoing nature, especially moving forward here.
Tout sera réglé très vite. 10 000 dollars pour ma liberté. Vous pouvez vous payer la moitié d'un lion avec ça.
There's an argument to be made that the section where he convinces her to go with him is a bit rushed, particularly after so much time was given to the competition. It might have also been frustrating to viewers only interested in the romance aspect of the film, as honestly, it only really begins here. This final half hour plus certainly contains much more of the eroticism that Jacquin fans had no doubt been waiting for as well, so perhaps the film might have found a bit more acceptance of time had a couple of changes at the script level occurred. But regardless, it's a super minor nitpick, as this is a really fine work, long deserving of a much larger audience. Now this is one of the most memorable scenes in the movie, and it's the one that's most in debt to both the classic Hollywood comedies of the 30s up through the 60s. You can definitely see Rock Hudson and Doris Day doing something like this in one of their films from the early to mid-60s. But this also brings to mind even more absurdist Italian comedies of the early to mid-70s. This is probably the most laugh-out-loud section of the film, with Hayden especially showing off her considerable skills as a physical comedian. Madame Claude had a few moments like this where you could literally feel the cold in the air, and you can just sense how freezing Dale Hayden is throughout this scene. It's super effective.
Mince.
Vous savez que vous avez de jolies jambes.
Monsieur le curé aime regarder sur les jupes des dames.
Tenez, ne vous gênez pas.
I really love how the rain clears up here as they're approaching the lights of the circus. It's a neat thematic entryway into the brightest and most rural section of the film, as well as a clear signal that Elizabeth's future is coming more into view.
C'est ça?
Pas mal, hein? Un rêve, quoi.
Si je refuse de descendre.
The little moment here where Pierre is attempting to help Elizabeth out of the car is a humorous mini little battle of the sexes that allows us both to see how much more comfortable Pierre is in his own space and just how independent Elizabeth is. Another trademark of the romantic comedy genre is taking a character or characters and putting them out of their element and comfort zone. Think It Happened One Night or Bring in a Baby. Or even flash forward to the 60s with something like Man's Favorite Sport, and you can see the importance of throwing a lead character into circumstances very much out of their control, often caused by locations that they are unfamiliar with. I absolutely love Pierre's cozy little trailer here that serves as the interior setting for some of the key moments here in this final act of the film. It allows us to really get a good look at some of the splendid set design that's a trademark of all of Jacquin's works. The man responsible for most of the set decoration throughout The Last Romantic Lover is seasoned veteran, Spanish-born Enrique Alarcón, who does some of the best work of his career here. He was the winner of a Lifetime Achievement Goya Award, and he was already in his 60s, with near several decades of film work already under his belt when he worked for Jacquin here.
Tranquille 5 minutes.
S'il vous plaît, laissez-moi vivre ma vie. De toute façon, j'ai besoin de téléphoner ce soir.
Alarcón had in fact been around the film world since the early 40s, working mostly as a set director, but also art and production designer on a number of works throughout the 40s on. Not surprisingly, he spent much of his career in Spain, often working on quickly shot, low-budget productions that called on him to work cheaply and quickly. No matter the budget, though, he had a real talent for helping to give the films he worked on a grounded realism, and by the early 70s, he was working more and more on international co-productions with larger budgets than he'd previously been granted, like Terence Young's Red Sun. The Last Romantic Lover would turn out to be one of the first and last French films Alarcón worked on, and it would only be the only time he worked with Jacquin, as he would retire just a few years after this film.
Tu seras à moi, je te posséderai. Nom de Dieu que les hommes sont cons.
Alors là, je suis bien d'accord avec vous.
Audience members who had been patiently waiting for a scene more in step with Jacquin's earlier works are granted their wish here. The nudity, particularly a lingering shot of Elizabeth in the shower coming up, might seem gratuitous to today's eyes, but the European attitudes towards nudity and sexuality in film were much more relaxed than today's increasingly conservative landscape, and that should be kept in mind watching any film from this period. The naturalness of this scene is very refreshing, and I love how Hayden projects a sense of both being a bit uncomfortable while being obviously attracted to Pierre. These two have a real connection, and you can watch both their guards begin to drop as the scene progresses. This connection that they are beginning to feel here is really noticeable, and their chemistry, that is so vital to the rest of the work, is really palatable.
À vos ordres. Désolé, pas de striptease.
Vous allez attraper froid. Rentrez dans l'eau.
Dale Hayden discusses her attitudes towards nudity in film during this period on the interview that accompanies this disc, and it's super interesting to hear her thoughts. Like a lot of actresses from the period, Hayden was no stranger to nudity both in film and print. Her first film role in 1973 was found in the Disney family film The World's Greatest Athlete. Despite the fact that its release coincided with the R-rated paperback Hero, Hayden didn't want to be typecast as a Disney-fied family actress, which is one thing that led to her famous Playboy spread in the spring of 1973. The pictorial worked, and Hayden never fell into the rather bland world of family-friendly pictures that she could have. Also, Hayden was very much in charge of her career, though, and she never allowed herself to be demeaned in any way. And Jacquin especially films her with both care and respect, in both this and Madame Claude. This is one of the funniest moments in the film, as Pierre instructs a bothered but slightly amused Elizabeth on his favorite position, which he calls tenderness. Jacquin immediately, again, throws an unexpected curveball at audience members expecting a hot sex scene here. While the film does become more erotic and explicit in this final section, Jacquin never allows the film to slip into the softcore realm that his critics always attempted to ghettoize his name with.
Intéressant. L'ennui, c'est que je vais m'endormir.
Ça a été inventé pour ça.
Excitant.
By the way, I should also note that the bearded woman that we see throughout the film and in the scene watching these two is the very talented Zarika Lozic, whose work as the costume designer on this and Madame Claude I detailed earlier.
Oui, t'inquiète pas. Que font-il? La lumière vient de s'éteindre.
The sudden flash of sunshine throughout these moments, after a number of scenes both in the rain and at night, is quite refreshing. I love Fraser's lighting as the sun pours into Pierre's room, and the great cinematographer's work in general really sparkles throughout these upcoming moments, which I'll go into detail here in a bit.
Pourquoi? Quelle heure est-il?
6h30. Du soleil.
6h30.
It is such an absolute shame that Dale Hayden didn't appear in more starring roles after this film, as she's an absolute revelation throughout this. Hayden absolutely excels, playing this classic screwball heroine, and is along with Sylvia Christel the most original and unique actor that Jacquin ever worked with. I just simply cannot imagine anyone else in this role, and Hayden never lets her character's intelligence and independence slip. It's just a really fine performance. Here's a really great look at the set decoration. The daylight coming in really allows us to see all of the detail and thought that went into this interior location. I unfortunately don't have any information on Chloe the chimp running wild here, nor any of the other beautiful animals that we see throughout the rest of the film. Jacquin loved to use the type of early morning mist that we see her throughout his filmography. There is never a moment in any of his films where the audience's eye doesn't have somewhere to go. He ensures that every scene, no matter how minor, contains at least one aspect that is visually arresting. I also love how Jacquin was never afraid to use natural sound, and had a great instinct as to when to use his extraordinary scores, and sometimes more importantly, when not to. Such as this scene where we can hear the sounds of nature in the early morning surrounding these two. Bernard Ortian, a man who began his career with the French New Wave and ended with no less a master than Almodovar, was in charge of the sound in this film, and I particularly appreciate his work during these more rural moments. This charming little farming community is really lovely, and I kind of want to move there, although I suspect the circus has traveled on, sadly. This looks like a real country shop here. I wonder if Jacquin had any adjustments made to it or just filmed it as it was. These two continue to joke about their perceived gender roles, which they will continue to do throughout. I don't feel like films from this period should ever be separated from the social and societal issues happening at the time, no matter the genre. And all of Jacquin's films in one way or another have that decidedly feminist undercurrent that I previously mentioned. Elizabeth is neither planning nor willing to conform. I love when she just randomly starts throwing food items into her basket here. As both her and Pierre are in on this very flirtatious joke. Isn't this location gorgeous? Wow. I'm not exactly sure when this was shot, but I'm guessing the fall of 1977, as the early morning air here is obviously crisp, as Elizabeth's sweater shows us. The very athletic Hayden was certainly no stranger to the outdoors, so she does a really superb job here playing a character who absolutely is out of her element, not being back in Paris. This little turtle here is a perfect choice, and is an example of how Jacquin always thinks out of the box when it comes to his films and photography. Same here with a copy of Francois hanging out of Elizabeth's pants pocket. Everything in Jacquin's films are designed to be visually interesting. It's one of the main things that connects his work to the upcoming Cinéma du Look movement that marked the second French New Wave in the 80s. As I said earlier, Jacquin's cinematic son seems to me, at least, to be Jean-Jacques Benex, as he was another filmmaker who understood the importance of the tiniest of details and visual cues. These moments look straight up like aspects of Benex's Betty Blue, but it is absolutely Rosalind and the Lions that shows off this film's sadly undermentioned influence the most. Released just over a decade after The Last Romantic Lover, the epic Rosalind and the Lions hit French theaters in the spring of 1989, and it contains many connections to Jacquin's film. Benex's film, concerning a romance between a lion tamer and a young woman named Rosalind, like Jacquin's film, failed to find much of an audience when it was released, but is now considered a cult classic and one of the great Benex's finest works. Jacquin's wide-reaching influence has never gotten its due, but if you want to witness some of it, pair up this film with Rosalind and the Lions for an eye-opening and entertaining double feature. They're an absolutely perfect pair by two of France's most underrated filmmakers. By the way, RIP to the great Benex, whose film Moon in the Gutter means a lot to me and inspired the name of my blog. We're coming up on Dale Hayden's least favorite moment of the film due to her paralyzing fear of snakes. Hayden talks at length in the interview on the disc about this scene with the snakes and the challenge of shooting with all of these wild animals in general. This sequence as a whole is quite unlike any other in the film. While I don't think he's ever expressed much interest in it, I always thought Jacquin would have made the most splendid thriller or even horror film. It certainly would have been amongst the most stylish. He often mentioned in this period, and since then, that he greatly desired to make an action or even especially sports-related picture, as he loved both. The closest he ever came to that dream was in his final production, the very campy and exciting Gwendolyn. Here are those dreaded snakes. Kudos to Hayden for being up to the challenge. I don't think that I could be. While this film owes much to the classic Hollywood comedies I've mentioned, this particular moment feels much more indebted to Todd Browning's unforgettable 1932 production Freaks, the great cinéaste like Jacquin would have been most familiar with. This is a surprisingly chilling and intense sequence in an otherwise light production and allows for one of the most traditional plot points in its running time, that of Pierre coming to Elizabeth's rescue. Oh,
Allez, partez.
The lighting in these nighttime scenes is handled incredibly well. It manages to be both natural and vivid, and not at all overly dark or artificial looking like so many more modern productions. There's actually something about the entirety of the scene that reminds me a bit of the look of Jean Roland's Grapes of Death. It was also released in 1978. Again, this scene is a bit of an oddity compared to the rest of the film, but romantic comedies traditionally have never been afraid of putting a protagonist in harm's way as a plot point to get them closer to their love interest.
Le cirque est en train de mourir. C'est pour lui que j'ai accepté de participer à votre putain de concours.
Alors pourquoi avoir refusé mon argent?
Pourquoi?
This is probably the film's most emotional scene, or at least amongst them. It really shows off Hayden's extremely impressive range as an actress. She shows us both the character's bravery and determination despite her fears, and her tears seem extremely natural. Ishmael also shines more and more as an actor as the film progresses, and I'm impressed by his performance as well, although clearly this is Dale Hayden's show.
Je peux faire quelque chose?
Mais ici.
Watch the film's promotion centered on the scenes in the circus with the animals and Hayden. Not at all surprising considering just how cinematic and memorable the upcoming ones are. The film's original French poster featured a number of circus scenes and the elephants behind a painting of Hayden, while some of the film's international posters played up the circus element even more, with one of the more memorable designs focusing almost exclusively on the lions, with Hayden and Ishmael in the background. Other English language posters played up the romance and televised competition more. Honestly, I don't think any of these posters do the film justice, especially compared to the earlier extraordinary designs that accompanied Jacquin's first three films. Unlike the other more wild animals that she encounters throughout the final section of the film, Hayden had already had some experience with horses, so I suspect her comfort level with them was much stronger. It's a lot of fun in the scene getting to watch her on this bungee-like cord, working with this absolutely beautiful horse, and Ishmael's closing line of, "You've got guts," is one of the most important of the film. Here's one of my favorite moments in the film, as we watch Pierre tenderly massage Hayden while Bachelet's gorgeous score plays in the background. Again, it is a moment that plays against audiences' expectations, who are just looking for a lengthy softcore sex scene. Instead, we are giving this extremely sweet, tender, and very intimate moment between these two. This is actually one of the most purely romantic scenes in the entirety of Jacquin's canon, and everything from the performances to Bachelet's score to Frazee's incredible photography are just handled so beautifully. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous moment. The way that Jacquin lets his camera linger on these two is fantastic. This actually feels much more intimate and private than just another sex scene, and I especially love the way that Pierre allows his hand to gently rub against Elizabeth's face. Any other director would have cut away much sooner from this, but Jacquin allows the moment space to breathe, and I love the length of it in general. It's perfectly rendered, and as brilliant in its way as the long 2-minute-plus take at the competition that I mentioned earlier. The circus worker's gradual acceptance of Elizabeth brightens the film's mood even more, and Hayden does a wonderful job silently showing her confidence and comfort level beginning to grow in this strange spot that she never in a million years expected she would be in. This little bit with these circus clowns rehearsing their walk together feels so incredibly natural that it almost looks improvised. It reminds me very much of a Chaplin-esque or even Buster Keaton scene you might have caught in any number of silent film comedies.
pas la barbe.
The quick moment that Elizabeth and the bearded lady have here resonates quite a bit, as it gives you the idea that Elizabeth is clearly not the only liberated and fiercely independent woman here at the circus. Also, isn't this scene underneath this swing just absolutely magical looking? And it's just so perfectly framed and filmed. At this point, Jacquin clearly recognizes the electrifying chemistry these two have together, and he delights in just letting his camera capture it. Well, speaking of magical, here you go. Robert Fraser has captured some truly incredible moments throughout his career, but these shots of Elizabeth and Pierre on this elephant in the French countryside is beyond beautiful, and stands with the most unforgettable images of the period. These, combined with Bachelet's yearning score, are the stuff of cinematic dreams, and the added touch of this napping man waking up to the sight of these two, as if he's still dreaming, is as poetic a moment in all of Jacquin's filmography as you'll find, and I'll fight anyone who isn't blown away by it. Also, Jacquin was never afraid to be self-referential in his work, especially at this point in his career, and like earlier in the film, Emmanuel gets another cinematic nod, as these scenes very much recall the famous horse-riding sequences of Jacquin's first film. To quote David Bowie's famous song from just a year before this, "Don't you wonder sometime about sound and vision?" And these two things come together so spectacularly here, with the sound of Bachelet's score, the horse's hooves gently hitting the ground, along with the sound of ambient nature around them, all perfectly combined in the most musical and haunting moment of the film. This is glorious, just drunk on cinema stuff. This love scene in the barn loft is certainly closer in tone to Jacquin's first three films, but it is still nowhere near as explicit.
Je vais te montrer qui est l'homme ici.
Pourquoi tu doutes?
Oui, je doute.
C'est moi l'homme.
C'est moi.
Non, c'est moi.
C'est moi.
Non, c'est moi.
This whole sequence has the kind of gazy, sleepy-eyed style that was expected of Jacquin, but it just has a general different feel than anything else he ever did. Quick shots of the farmhand peeking in combined with the sheep casually going about their day adds to the uniqueness of what could have been just a throwaway sex scene. It's made even more surprising and interesting by the fact that Hayden remains nearly fully clothed, again throwing off the audience's preconceived notions of what they were going to get from a Juste Jacquin film from 1978. This brief bath scene is even more interesting in both its naturalness as Elizabeth bathes Pierre's back and its daringness, as it again is the male actor here who is more exposed than the traditionally bare actress. Once again, Jacquin always delights in the unexpected, and he has no problem going against audiences' expectations.
Mais oui, Max. Mais je.
Qu'est-ce qu'il dit?
Mais Max.
Qu'est-ce qu'il dit?
Qu'est-ce qu'il dit? Écoute. Non mais.
Frustratingly, despite all of its exceptional and great qualities, The Last Romantic Lover failed to light up the French or European film market in general, and became Jacquin's lowest grossing film. Jacquin recalled at the screening found on this disc that the film didn't really find an audience until it was released in Canada a couple of years after its initial release, where it was greeted there with a good box office take and some of the kindest reviews it got. For the most part, though, critics everywhere just seemed once again clueless as to how to handle Jacquin's work. Nearly every review went the same way. comparing the film to Emmanuel, and offering up the thought that audiences were bound to be disappointed, something that I'm sure hurt the film upon its release. Few fail to note Hayden's extraordinary performance, save for Kevin Thomas in his Los Angeles Times piece, where he noted and praised her wit and range. The only thing the critical community at large seemed to agree on was Fraser's exceptional photography and the look of the film in general.
Inda.
Once again, Jacquin's extremely thoughtful work was reduced by the critical establishment as all surface. Many critics didn't bother reviewing the film at all, and the delay in garnering a wide release outside of France, along with a number of nonsensical title changes, like Playmate, certainly didn't help. It continues to bum me out that such a great filmmaker was so repeatedly ignored or torn down by critics, many of whom I remain convinced didn't actually see the films in question. The Last Romantic Lover's reception once again hurt Jacquin and damaged the momentum that his early works had gathered him. The notices weren't as savage as his other films received, but the damage was clearly done. The scene we just watched, featuring Hayden and the elephant stepping above her, was the most dangerous stunt in the entire film. Much respect to Hayden, who did it all herself. I can't imagine how terrifying it must have been, having that giant paw stepping right above her, knowing full well that its weight could crush, and possibly kill her, had a mistake occurred. Much like the time given to the televised competition earlier, Jacquin allows the audience the opportunity to watch a bit of the circus's show here, featuring Elizabeth, who is clearly all in at this point. Any other filmmaker would have probably taken the safer bet and shortened the film down to closer to the 90-minute range, but removing scenes like this would have damaged the daring spirit of the film, and Jacquin is far too intelligent a filmmaker to make that mistake. There is a whimsical aspect to these scenes, especially, that add to the general fairy tale quality of the film. Jacquin had dealt heavily with themes of fantasy in both Emmanuel and Story of O, but he had never been able to show off his flair for whimsy like he does here. There's just a real certain quirkiness in scenes like this that I believe helped inspire a future filmmaker like Zalman King, who would take both Jacquin's trademark softcore work and combine them with little odd moments like this to create something truly distinctive and quite unlike anything else. Certainly a film like King's weird Southern Gothic cult masterpiece Tomb Junction owes much to Jacquin's entire filmography. Speaking of Jacquin's humor, I hope everyone caught that quick moment in the background when that circus worker received a gentle, playful slap, much to his shock. This film, and indeed all of Jacquin's works, are filled with thoughtful little moments like that, and you just simply find nothing else like them. This dance scene is so fun and sweet, and I love the touch of the band packing it up behind him while our two very much in love protagonists just continue to dance away. It's actually a perfect segue to this love scene that once again features Jacquin's camera lingering on our young couple as they just tenderly touch each other's faces, looking very much like any young couple in a newfound love affair. Despite some nudity in this scene, Jacquin's main interest is in these two faces, and especially their profiles as they stare deeply into each other's eyes. With Bachelet's score seductively playing over it, this moment is one of the film's most genuinely erotic, but again, it is nowhere near as explicit as Jacquin's earlier works. The editing in this scene is so wonderfully rendered and highlights the pleasure that Elizabeth is feeling incredibly well. In fact, one of the most important aspects of all of Jacquin's films was indeed women's pleasure. While they are certainly products of their time, Jacquin's films feel much, much more progressive than any of his counterparts that were saddled with any type of erotic label. To my eyes, at least, Zhu Shikan was one of the most important filmmakers making movies that coincided with both the feminist and sexual revolution. From Emmanuel to Gwendolyn, Shikan chronicled the lives of extremely complicated and liberated women traveling the often judgmental and dangerous times they lived in. The Last Romantic Lover should have completely altered the course of Jacquin's filmmaking career, as it more than proves just how brilliant and diverse he could be. Sadly, as mentioned, audiences just weren't there for it. Such an absolute shame, as this is such a very special film. Things would sadly only get worse as far as Jacquin's critical and popular standing went. For his follow-up, he would return to more erotic territory with his dazzling short film, The Island of Mermaids, in the terrific anthology Private Collections. After that was both ignored or savaged, Jacquin returned to the world of feature-length filmmaking in 1980, with a film just as surprising and memorable as The Last Romantic Lover, the coming-of-age comedic drama Girls. After that film slipped immediately into undeserved obscurity, a justifiably frustrated Jacquin would close out his film career with two more, at times, brilliant works, Lady Chatterley's Lover, which reunited him with Sylvia, and the aforementioned Gwendolyn, a comic book-inspired film that surprisingly became one of Jacquin's most popular in recent years. For me, though, The Last Romantic Lover, along with Madame Claude, remains his two finest achievements.
Tu la vois comment, notre vie ensemble?
Pourquoi?
Je sais pas. Il faut y penser un jour.
Je ne la vois pas du tout.
Tying in with Madame Claude is this scene between Elizabeth and Pierre that turns the film completely on its head. One of the keys to Madame Claude was the idea of surveillance. So discovering that Elizabeth has secretly been recording her time with the circus in the hopes of writing an exposé goes extremely well thematically with Jacquin's earlier film.
On ne pouvait pas se bagarrer tout le temps. Puisque contre elle y avait, j'ai pensé qu'il valait...
Ishmael is particularly great in this scene, and he looks genuinely hurt by Elizabeth's perceived betrayal. The surprise twist that Elizabeth has been very much in charge the whole time goes right along with the underlying feminism that has guided the film.
Voici jour après jour le récit de mon aventure dans un cirque minable.
This twist also plays right into one of romantic comedy's most older conventions, that of a late film breakup between our two lovers, before their eventual return together.
Triste début. Deuxième jour, je le provoque en lui lançant son petit déjeuner à la figure.
This is the most heartbreaking and unexpected scene of the film, since we, as an audience, are very well aware that we have been watching these two fall in love with each other throughout the film's running time.
Troisième jour, séduction à l'européenne.
It's important, though, that we do see Elizabeth questioning this new relationship and whether this is actually the life she wants. It simply would have been dishonest to the strong character that we have seen throughout to have her simply fall into a man's arms. Her confusion is as palatable as his hurt, and Jacquin handles this moment with care, clarity, and skill.
Madame, quand vous voulez.
Dale Hayden would follow up The Last Romantic Lover with one of her most high-profile films, the English-language production North Dallas 40. That would turn out to be her final film of the 70s. She wouldn't return until 1983, when she appeared in Philip LeBreau's The Crime. She would continue working throughout the 80s, into the 90s, with films ranging from English-language thrillers such as Bedroom Eyes to a few more French films and television roles. Hayden would retire from the screen in the late 90s to concentrate on her humanitarian work, writing, and other career interests. The Last Romantic Lover remains both her greatest role and film, and a vivid reminder of a truly gifted actress.
Arrête-toi, s'il te plaît. Tu veux toujours m'épouser?
Bien sûr.
Playing James here is Ben Simon, a very handsome actor who actually only had a few film roles to his name, with this being amongst the first.
Okay.
Even though the romantic comedy genre is filled with scenes featuring one of our protagonists marrying the wrong person before realizing they have made a mistake, these set in Vegas scenes have a real element of heaviness and sadness to them, as it is obvious that Elizabeth is in love with Pierre, but she doesn't want to lose the life that she's made, and she doesn't want to lose herself in general.
Congratulations to you.
Once again, Hayden proves herself an incredibly adept and extraordinary actress, able to portray a full gamut of emotions, often just in a single take, and often without having to say a word. You can sense Elizabeth's sadness and confusion throughout this wedding scene. And as portrayed by Hayden, it's more than a bit heartbreaking to watch.
Tu es heureuse?
Oui.
À quoi veux-tu échapper, Elizabeth?
À moi-même.
This final dialogue scene in the film finds Elizabeth admitting that the person that she is running away from is actually herself, and that she is indeed very much in love with Pierre, no matter how much she doesn't want to be.
Les éléphants, ils restent sur mon estomac. N'être qu'avec toi. Avoir des enfants, pas des clowns.
Despite literally just having left the wedding chapel, her new husband seems to accept a fact that he already instinctually understood. As he says at one point, "I'm so damn jealous of that Frenchman." But he loves Elizabeth enough to apparently let her go, even giving her a gentle reminder that a plane is always waiting.
Cinquième jour. Mais qu'est-ce qui se passe? Mon cœur bat plus vite.
One of Elizabeth's final lines in the film is, "I love fairy tales," a notion that calls the film's conclusion very much into question.
C'est ridicule, c'est grotesque. Il faut que je m'en aille tout de suite, sinon je suis foutu. Septième jour. Je l'aime, il n'y a rien.
Are we really watching the beginning of the rest of Elizabeth's life with James here? Is this it? Does she really only have a loveless marriage and traditional life in her future? Or will she indeed turn around and fly back to Paris for the promise of, yeah, perhaps a more difficult life, but a happier one nonetheless? Jacquin never completely answers that question for us, instead giving us an ending that is partially ambiguous and lets us decide for ourselves.
Dans la place de ce foutu français.
As we are watching this lovely little montage that ends the film, we, as an audience, have to ask ourselves, is this all a fantasy? Are we just watching one of Elizabeth's fairy tales playing out in her head? Or does she actually fly back to France to be with Pierre? I like to think she went back, and the signs of snowfall we see at the very end here signal us that a little time has gone by, and maybe, just maybe, she did return to him and their little circus after all, hopefully finding herself as well as true love in the end. Thanks so much to Nico B and Cult Epics for the great opportunity to provide the commentary track for this tremendous motion picture. It was such a real pleasure, and I'm so excited for more people to discover this film. Thanks so much again for listening and watching, and until next time.
chacun sa voix, à chacun son histoire. Je n'écrirai rien dans mes mémoires. Les chansons d'amour fredonnent des histoires, des histoires d'amour qui veulent nous faire croire que l'amour d'un jour, c'est pas l'amour. Qu'est-ce que ça peut faire, le temps qui court? Qu'est-ce que ça peut faire, un an, un jour? On dit, qu'est-ce que ça veut dire, le grand amour? Qu'est-ce que ça veut dire, durer toujours? Qu'est-ce que ça veut dire?